couldn't find anybody to do tile. So I was like, oh. So my wife and I spent an afternoon and we did a tile backsplash because, you know, we can do it. I don't like to. And, you know, early on, I learned how to do everything on those first few deals. Today, I actually generally tell people that knowing how to do things was actually a liability for me. The fact that I was handy and wanted to be handy was a huge liability. I mean, the fact that I'm at 52 units, I should be at 152 units right now.
Welcome to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals who work with investors, buyers, and sellers of commercial real estate coast to coast. Whether you're an investor, broker, lender, property manager, attorney, or accountant, we're here to learn from the experts.
Welcome to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio. This is episode number 70. Weekly, we share interviews with real estate experts, passing on their experience and knowledge. Thanks for joining us this week. My name is Jade Aaron Gross. We're so glad you're here. We are always looking for information that can help you move your real estate investing to the next level. In just a minute, we're going to speak with Brandon Turner. Brandon is the co-host of the Bigger Pockets podcast. He's an investor, an author, and more. Today, he shares with us his path from studying for law school to owning over 50 units and becoming the co-host of the Bigger Pockets podcast. He also shares some lessons he's learned and what he recognizes has limited his growth of his portfolio and or limited the growth of his portfolio, rather. He also points to some advice for new investors on what it takes to get started and what you need to be successful. If you are a returning listener, we want to thank you for coming back. And if you are a first-time listener, we want to thank you for checking out the Commercial Real Estate Pro Network podcast. If you have not yet subscribed to our program, it's really easy, and we hope that you'll consider doing it. There's a couple of ways you can do it. One, you can go to the website, commercialrealestatepronetwork.com. And when you're there, the menu bar has the podcast button. You click on that, and when that page opens, there's a subscribe button. And go ahead and click subscribe, and it'll give you two options, whether it be iTunes or Stitcher, whichever you prefer. Or if you're already a user of iTunes or Stitcher, you can go there and type in the search bar. Go ahead and type in Commercial Real Estate Pro Network. And when you see our logo pop up, it's the headphones with CREPN between the ears. Go ahead and click subscribe. And like that, you are done. That way you can listen to the show whenever and wherever you prefer. I'd like to invite you to connect with me if we have not yet done so. Whether you're working on a deal or you just want to talk about, you know, what's going on, or if you have an insurance question, I'm happy to help. In any case, go ahead and reach out to me. My contact information is on the website, commercialrealestatepronetwork.com. You can also shoot me an email. The email address is Darren, D-A-R-R-I-N, at jdarrengross.com, and that's just the letter J. Also, my phone number's on the contact button information there on commercialrealestatepronetwork.com. Either way, like I said, if you have a deal you want to talk to or talk about, or if you have a particular situation or an insurance question, let me know, and I'll do whatever I can to help. All right, lastly, before we get on with the show, if you are on LinkedIn, be sure to check out our group. It's called Commercial Real Estate Pro Network. It's a great place to network with commercial real estate professionals. Please consider joining the group. All right, let's get on with the show.
On the call this morning, I'm fortunate to have my guest. He is an investor, he's an author, a musician, he's a husband. He's also the plaid-wearing senior editor at Bigger Pockets and a co-host of the Bigger Pockets podcast, of which now they've got over 200 episodes, and his newest role as a father. Welcome, my guest, Brandon Turner. Brandon, welcome.
Hey, thank you so much. It's awesome to be here.
I'm glad to be able to do this, and thanks for arranging your schedule here. We're talking early in the morning here on a Monday, and yeah. Excited to do this. But yeah. Hey, Brandon, I'm sure many of my listeners are familiar with you from Bigger Pockets, and if they're not, I'm going to encourage everybody to go check out Bigger Pockets. But I was wanting to, before we get into our conversation today, get a little bit more about your background. If you could kind of explain to the guests or our listeners, you're the guest, a little bit about how you got started and investing and how you got to Bigger Pockets.
Sure. So when I was 21, I moved to a little area called Grays Harbor, Washington, which is about an hour and a half southwest of Seattle. I met my wife in college, and we ended up moving there because she's from there. And I realized when I got there that housing was really affordable. I mean, my very first house, I was looking to rent a house, and a friend of mine said, why don't you just buy something? It's cheaper. And I'm like, there's no way it's cheaper to buy. And she said, no, really. She was a realtor. She's like, really? I can help you buy something. So I went out and bought the cheapest house I could find, and it was like, at the time, $75,000 or $80,000, and bought the house. And sure enough, it was cheaper than what it would have been for me to rent. And I rented out a room to a buddy, and I realized like there's something kind of cool about this real estate thing. So that was my very first deal.
Wow! So You were looking to rent, and you ended up buying. That's a flip of the script there compared to the normal thing.
Yeah, and I like to say, my mom was a garage sale mom, if you know what that is. You know, like a mom, every Saturday, pack the kids up in the minivan, we'd go garage sailing. And so the one thing I learned from her is buy a good deal. So, I mean, I just found the cheapest property in a decent neighborhood, and I bought it, lived in it for a year, and then sold it and made like 20 grand. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty fantastic. That's kind of a cool thing. I just invented this way to make money. And all of a sudden, I realized there was millions of people doing it. And that's actually when I discovered Bigger Pockets was when I was kind of researching, what do I want to do next? How can I do this real estate thing full time? So reading books and reading Bigger Pockets.
So really, so your first deal was more of a house to live in than as opposed to investment kind of thing, huh?
Yeah. The actual, when I first bought it, I had no intention of selling it, no intention of doing anything with real estate. I was working a basically minimum wage job at the time that I didn't like at all and just needed a place to live. And I thought, well, I could rent out this room. I rented out to my brother-in-law one of the rooms and a coworker of mine. And which was all terrible ideas, but, you know, it paid the bills. Yeah, I remember sitting one time and thinking, you know, I think I want to backpack Europe. I think I want to just go and spend a year and backpack around Europe because I thought that was a cool thing to do. And so I started thinking, well, how do I do that? How would I be able to afford, you know, I probably need 50. At the time, I was thinking 15 grand would give me a whole year in Europe, which, of course, when you're 21, 15 grand probably could give you a year in Europe. And so I was like, I bet I could sell my house. I wonder what I could get for it. And I asked the I bought it for, like I said, 70. I think it was 78 or 79 when I bought it. After I kind of fixed it up on my own, kind of learned how to paint and put some carpet in. And I asked the realtor, 9 months later, maybe not even that, the same one who helped me buy it. I said, what do you think this thing is worth now? And this was 2007. So, you know, the market's crazy anyway. And we were at the peak. It's like a roller coaster and you're like at the top looking down. And she's like, I think we can get 140 for it. And I'm like, 140? Holy, you know, so, I mean, after paying all the closing costs, and it didn't go for quite 140, but almost, I think it was mid-130s, and then paying back all the money I spent on the repairs, mostly on credit card, you know, I cleared like 20 grand. And, that was the beginning.
Oh, that's awesome. No, I love hearing about the first deal. I think that's what usually gets people hooked is, you know, I know my personal story was kind of a similar kind of stumbled into something though, and Shazam, you know, like, holy crap. I mean, I made, you know, what I almost made in a year of working and selling a property there. So, that's awesome. So let me ask you, knowing that you're a new father, I was going to ask you about, what was scarier, your first deal or, looking at the hospital in the rearview mirror as you're taking off with your new child?
Yeah, the kid, having the kid was scarier. You know, what's funny about real estate is I've never really been nervous about anything I've done. And I don't know if it's just because, like, I'm really cocky about it. Like, I'm just like, yeah, I'll figure it out, whatever. You know, so, like, I remember just diving in my first deal. And, like, when I look back, I'm like, I was a moron. I mean, I had no money. I had a minimum wage job. I had no idea what I was doing. But I was so stupid. I didn't know I was so stupid. You know, I just was like, oh, this is what people do. They buy houses and then they do this. And you know, I got out, like I said, at the time. I mean, I remember sitting in my empty house. We'd empty the thing out because, it sold. It was pending and we were getting ready to move. And I remember sitting in my living room and the only thing left in there was a TV and that was it. And I was watching the news and it was like end of October 2007. And it was just one of the Bear Stearns or one of them had just collapsed. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, like the economy, like the entire economy is failing. I hope this thing closes. Like, and then like it was like a week later we closed, and we closed on Halloween. And I remember thinking, just, you know, oh, I got out good. And then I immediately went and bought another house to flip. And then I bought a duplex to live. I needed a place to live. So I lived in a duplex and rented the other half out and bought a house to flip and realized that the flip didn't turn out so good because the economy was in free fall. But the rental property, no matter how bad the economy did, even though I paid at the peak of the market, and no matter how bad the economy did, my rents stayed the same. And in fact, my rents went up over the next couple of years, and I was living for free in this little duplex. And that's when I really discovered that rental properties were where I wanted to go, was that financial freedom that you can get from owning rentals.
So 2007, you're selling at the high of the market. You're also jumping back into the market, like you said, are you paying full retail, or you said you're finding flips is what you're doing then?
Yeah. You know, both houses or both properties, the duplex and the single family, I bought right around the same time, and both of them needed a considerable amount of work. I mean, today, we've recovered, you know, quite a bit since the collapse. But I mean, I paid, and again, these are prices are crazy cheap because this is Hoquiam, Washington, which everything was cheap back then. I mean, I bought my duplex for $85,000. I bought the single family for $50,000. Now, both were really good deals because they were at the time. Today, though, I wouldn't pay half that for either one. like even though the economy has changed, like I find much better deals today, or I try to, because, you know, I realized those were decent deals, but like the flip I overpaid for, at least knowing what the market was going to do. I ended up putting close to $50,000 into the flip, so I had about 100 into it. Today, it's worth about 100. The duplex is worth about maybe what I paid for it. But every month I make, you know, after paying out all the fees and the utilities and everything like that, you know, the duplex still makes me around $300 a month today. Even though I moved out a long time ago, I lived in it for a year, but still makes good income and good, you know, just adds to my bottom line.
On your single family and your like duplex and stuff, what's the average stay of your tenants?
Oh, good question. I would say probably on average 2 years. Maybe, you know, depending on the property. Some of my properties, you know, they stay for a lot longer. Houses tend to attract people longer. You know, at least in my area, the apartments tend to go a little bit shorter. But that's not even always true. I mean, my 24-unit apartment complex, you know, we have maybe one vacancy a month there. On average, people stay pretty long, but I try to keep my rents a little bit under. Like, I don't maximize to the, you know, push it to the highest possible that I can get, because I don't really like renting out units very much. Now I don't even do that anymore. I hire someone to do it, but I just don't like having vacancy, so I keep it just slightly under.
Yeah, no, I like your philosophy. I'm a fan of that myself. I've always been kind of humored by the people that will get the maximum rent, but they'll be vacant for 2 months waiting to get the maximum rent, and trying to figure out how does that work that you're 2 months in and zero, and you know, and then you've probably got a more rapid turn.
I mean, we rarely have a vacancy for more than a week. I mean, usually it's a matter of, like, we're very efficient because we've been doing this now for a decade, but you know, we get, you know, they give us notice or whatever, they're going to move, they leave on the 31st or whatever, and we've already had several showings sometimes before then. Even before they're out, we'll sometimes show the unit. But if it's not very clean or whatever, we won't show it. You know, but we'll get that thing cleaned out on the first. We'll have four people in there working, getting it done. By the second or third, it's ready to go, and by the fifth, it's rented out. Usually, it's about that fast. You know, sometimes maybe a week. I mean, very rarely do we have a house set empty for a month, and that's usually because there was a lot of repairs to do.
Let me ask you about that. So, your average turn time. It sounds like you've got a crew, you've got a system that you know, jump on and get it done. What's an average expense you would expect on a turn?
Yeah, I probably spend, you know, on an apartment, you know, if it's not bad and we don't have to replace the carpet, you know, maybe $300 or $400. You know, on a single family house, we tend to spend more because people live a little bit. I don't want to say they live harder, but they live longer, right? So they dig in more. They got pets usually at that point. So usually we'll spend maybe $1,000 on that on a turnover. Now, a lot of times that's covered by their security deposit if it's stuff damage that they did. Another thing that I find is because when I started out, I didn't fix properties up the way that I should have, that I do today. And so I would basically get them rent ready at almost minimum standards, like not like slumlord standards, but you know, I would do things that I just today I've learned not to do. And so a good example of that is when I first started, I liked the look of flat paint. So I used flat paint everywhere for the first couple of years. I just thought it looked nice, and I'd use it in my own house, right? But with tenants, flat paint just doesn't work well because you get smudges and handprints everywhere. So now I'm going back in all the early houses, we're using semi-gloss paint all over the walls.
Yeah, something you can scrub.
So. Yeah, exactly. Something I can scrub and I don't have to clean so much. And, you know, also like we used to like color match every paint. Like we try to like match the color that was on the wall, but then you go back and you got to cut out a little piece of wall again to color match it again. The color matches are never perfect. And so now everything gets the same color. Every property that I have gets the exact same color, the same sheen, the same brand, the same everything. And my team knows it. So we just buy it in bulk.
No, that makes a lot of good sense. Hey, let me ask you. So you mentioned you got a 24 unit, and you've also got some single family duplexes. How many doors are you currently? How many doors do you currently have?
Yeah, I think it's 52. It might be 54 now. We just bought a duplex, and I carry one note. So I'm now a note investor, and then the 24 unit. And then I got like a 5, a 4. A couple threes, a couple twos, and a few ones. So yeah, total it's 52, 53, 54 units, somewhere in there.
What, going from the single family to the multifamily, is there any lesson that was significantly different from the singles to the multis?
In terms of renting, it wasn't that different. In terms of, you know, finding tenants, that was all pretty much the same, maybe even slightly easier because we get a lot of leads from the tenants who live there. You know, it's family and friends want to come live next to other family and friends. But in terms of the actual project, I mean, it was just such a larger scope than I'd ever done before. And we try to tackle a lot of it on our own. So I quit my job at the time to just work on that property pretty much full time. So about a year I spent just working on that property. When we bought the 24 unit, only 11 units were rented. I think it was 11 or 12 units were rented. The rest were all vacant and in terrible condition. I mean, all of them needed new paint. Some needed all new drywall. They all needed new flooring. And I just went through my wife and I together, we'd go through one unit. I learned how to do carpet and knee kick it all. And I learned how to do, you know, flooring, cabinets, counters, everything. And we'd go through and we do the whole unit, get it rented, move on to the next. And so we went from 11 to 24 over the course of a year.
Carpet, flooring, the whole shebang. Huh? You're the cabinet. You do it all. That's awesome.
I do it all. I don't do it anymore. I don't do anything anymore. The only thing maybe I'll do now is like last year I did a backsplash because I could not find a tile guy. I had this property get rented out in like 4 days. Couldn't find anybody to do tile. So I was like, so my wife and I spent an afternoon and we did a tile backsplash because, you know, we can do it. I don't like to. And, you know, early on, I learned how to do everything on those first few deals. Today, I actually generally tell people that knowing how to do things was actually a liability for me. The fact that I was handy and wanted to be handy was a huge liability. I mean, the fact that I'm at 52 units, I should be at 152 units right now. But I was busy spending a year physically working on this property when I should have been hiring people to do it and finding the next deal. And so that definitely became a liability. It became much easier to say, I'll just take care of it whenever there's a problem versus I'm not paying a plumber $100 an hour to fix a stupid leak. You know, I can do that for $12, you know, in parts.
And 4 trips to the hardware store.
And 4, yeah. My record was 9 trips to Home Depot to fix a plumbing leak one time. And I mean, every time I've ever done plumbing, I've said, you know what? This is the last time I'm ever doing it. Never touching plumbing again.
Right.
Yeah, but now I got a buddy. The other day, a buddy calls me. He's like, hey, can you come just help me? My shower's not working real well. I know you know how to do this. Yeah, I'll come take a look. It should be real easy. 5 minutes. 4 trips to the hardware store later and 9 hours of work, and I still didn't fix it. I was I'm never doing plumbing again. I just keep telling myself that.
I like your thoughts that it's a liability because I've been there myself where I have you know, gone in and I know how to do that, or I've got some tools, or I've had the friend with more tools and brains and he agreed to help me, you know, and I'm just going like, holy crap. You know, if you hire the professional, yeah, you're going to pay, but the job's going to be done and you can go on and do your other things. I know, having the crew and having a, you know, somebody on speed dial that I can call and say, hey, get down there, take a look at this, tell me what it is, send me the bill, you know, that's a lot more efficient.
You know, we invest in kind of a rural area. It's like, you know, Grace Harbor, Washington. And so finding good contractors is tough. I mean, there aren't hundreds to choose from. There's dozens to choose from, and most of them are terrible. And so that's been our number one struggle for the past decade is how to find good people to do work. And that's another reason I ended up doing so much is because I could do it better than anybody else, or at least I'd be able to do it. The other guys wouldn't even return phone calls. So recently, the kind of way I overcame that is I just started hiring. Like, I hired a full-time in-house maintenance guy, and he does all of our maintenance, which, you know, I probably have 20 hours a week of maintenance over 52 units, maybe 20 hours worth. But he also helps manage our flips in a way, like, or our rehabs, I should say. We do a lot of rehabs when we buy a property and then we rent them out I call it the BRRRR strategy, where you buy a property, rehab it, rent it, and then refinance it to get all the money back into a 30-year fixed mortgage or whatever, and then repeat the process. So he manages the rehabs and he does all of our maintenance, and that's been just life-changing. I mean, he does all of it. I don't have to do any of the work anymore. I trust him. He knows what he's doing, and he's cheaper than any contractor is going to be.
No, that's nice. Somebody consistent, somebody you can trust. That's, I think, is a big thing.
Yeah, that's what I wanted. I mean, it's worth it just to have somebody I can call and say, can you do this today? Or more like, hey, do this today, right? Not, right. You know, I can get there next week. Well, it's a plumbing leak in the ceiling. It can't last till next week.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. You know, this guy's on my priority schedule, and that makes all the difference.
No, that's great. You mentioned you're doing flips. How many flips are you running at any one time?
Yeah, usually one at a time. I mean, I was doing two at one point, but I try to do of actual fix and flips where I'm going to sell them. I'm doing basically one at a time. So I've done two this year. I'm on my third right now. And then we are doing four or five rehabs of rental properties that we're going to rent out. And we've got too many of those going at one time, but it was just because we got a fourplex. It was like four single family houses that were completely, completely destroyed inside and outside. And we got all four of those houses at one time. And then we got another three houses at the same time. So we had seven, at one point we had seven rentals getting rehabbed at the same time. And so when you do that, especially when I have basically one crew. I've got this one guy who's leading it, and I've got a couple other guys that just do most of the work. Nothing was getting done for the longest time. Cause it was do a little bit of this project, a little bit of this project, a little bit of this project, you know, and then go back to this one, do a little more, and nothing ever gets done that way. So finally, after 2 months of that, I was like, what am I doing? I was like, okay, we are done on every property. 100% of effort goes into this one. Let's get that rented out, and then we'll move to the next one, and then the next one. And so now we're closing up, but we got one or two left. We got two left. We should be wrapped up by the end of the month on those two, and then, or at least on one of them, finish the other one in a few weeks after that, and then we're moving on.
Yeah, a little focused energy there.
Yeah.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, it's so funny. I know you from Bigger Pockets. I mean, whenever I think of Bigger Pockets, I think of you and Josh, and I was just curious. I didn't realize that you weren't there from the beginning. It seems like everything I see is it's the two of you. How did you come about to be a part of Bigger Pockets?
Yeah. So like I said earlier, I found Bigger Pockets when I was just doing my very first house, that one I lived in. And I remember thinking, I wanted the bigger story is I told my parents, I'm not going to law school anymore. At the time I was studying for law school. I even took the LSAT, the test to go to law school. And I was going to go be a lawyer because I figured that's what you do when you have a history degree. And I had a history degree. So So I told my parents, you know what? I just fell in love with this real estate thing. I started reading books. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I read a couple of real estate books. And I thought, this is what I want to do with my life. It just, nothing excited me more in life than this idea of being a real estate investor. So I told my parents that, and they said I was crazy. My dad said, you are going to go broke. Your tenants won't pay rent. You're not going to be able to afford the mortgages yourself, and you're going to lose everything and be homeless. That's what he basically said to me. And so I remember the day I typed in the computer. I don't know if it was Google at the time or if it was Dogpile or whatever it was at the time. I'm probably Google, but except in what to do when tenants don't pay rent. Because I was like, he's right. If they don't pay rent, I'm screwed. And I don't know how to manage people. And so I typed it in and I found this little site that was, not very big at the time called Bigger Pockets. And I remember printing out the document. I still have it today. I printed out the sheet that said what to do when tenants don't pay rent. And the big thing was I realized at that point that this was not, I use this analogy a lot. I was not jumping off some cliff by myself, like cliff diving or jumping out of a plane all by myself. That's not what real estate is. Real estate's like this hike through a mountain pass, right? So it's still a path that millions of people have walked before. It's very clearly labeled. It's still a hike. It still takes work and effort. But I'm not alone on this thing. I mean, there's a million people who have had tenants before me, and there's a lot of them that put information online or in books or whatever. And so what I realized that day was that there was a lot of information out there. For every one of those naysayers that says it can't be done, there were people saying, no, I'm doing it. Look, here's how you do it. And so I remember thinking, this is a pretty cool site. So I started following them. I eventually joined, became a member, and eventually even I started my own kind of real estate blog. I had a site called Real Estate in Your 20s, just kind of want to talk about how young people can get involved. Started volunteering writing for Josh at Bigger Pockets. He was just a one-man show running out of his basement at the time.
Wow.
And I just started volunteer writing for him. We became good friends, and then one time he put on his Facebook, hey, I need some help, the site's getting kind of big, I need a little bit of help managing things. So I was the very first guy to ever like jump in as a as an employee, so to speak. And from there, we just took off. We started the podcast soon after that. And then the site just took off like crazy. And that's why people kind of see the beginning of Bigger Pockets often as where I came in, yet it had existed for 5 years before that in Josh's basement.
Wow. I saw something online there, and I saw him at like a meetup or something somewhere, and kind of an earlier it was just him. You weren't there.
Yep.
But I was like,
yeah, he did a conference in Denver in 2012, and that was about the time that I was volunteer writing. That was when I was volunteer writing, but I wasn't actually part of anything official then. So yeah, we started the podcast, and that kind of blew the site up because it became a popular show.
Cool. So let me ask you, you guys have done over 200 episodes of the podcast. You've been contributing. And what is your position there? Are you, I think I saw senior editor. Is that your?
Yeah, I was senior editor. Then I was like VP of content. Then I was VP of growth. Today, honestly, I go by co-host of the podcast. I just think that's like, because I'm like, it's really, we've really struggled with defining what exactly do I do there, because I do whatever needs to be done. I do podcasts, I do videos, I do a lot of the outward facing things. So I now just say I'm co-host of the podcast, and I'm not really sure my actual, if I have a title anymore, even if
which really, title.
Yeah, I'm like, matter? It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I haven't jokingly said for a while, I call myself the janitor. I just clean up things, you know, I make things look good. And
there you go.
That's about it.
Well, you guys have great chemistry on the show. I always enjoy listening to Thanks. It and stuff, and it's great. But let me ask you, if you can point to one thing that you learned from either a guest on the show or something you've seen posted on the website that's a lesson you've taken into your own investing or something that really, you know, stuck out.
Sure. You know, maybe this is a little bit general, but I'll say it anyway. It's like what I'm continually surprised by on the podcast and on the site in general is just how diverse real estate investing is. I mean, just like I feel like we've done 200 shows. We've interviewed probably 180 guests. We've had a few repeats, but probably about 180 different guests. And no two stories are the same, not even close to being the same. I mean, they're so drastically different. Everybody's journey, everybody's story. And I think it's the thing that I love about real estate so much is that like you can invent your own story. You can invent your own path to get there. If you want rentals, you want flipping, you want wholesaling, you want to do, you know, big properties, cheap properties, you live in an expensive area or a cheap area, it doesn't matter. No matter what your position in life is, there are people succeeding in your area doing kind of what you want to do that would get you to your goals. And so I'm continually just blown away about how many different ways there are to invest. And again, people want to work full-time, part-time. They want to buy 1,000 properties, or they want just 6 properties to get them, you know, extra money for Christmas. There's just so much out there, so much variety that it's just like this never-ending treasure trove of knowledge and things to help you build wealth and financial freedom.
No, that is one of the things I love about real estate. Yeah, I think along those lines, too, what I've learned from some of my longer customers that are in real estate is that, you know, the market's going to change. Whatever you're in today that's really good, it's going to be good for a little while. It's the guy that can understand where the market's going and navigate that and yep. continue to find the path. It's always amazed me because, you know, it's really easy to point to the guy that lost everything in the crash. Or the guy that once was this high flying, you know, dude, and like I said, he lost everything. But how many of those guys actually find another way to get back in and are back up again? You know, I mean, they just continue to see that the market has opportunities and do that. So, well, let me ask you this. So we talked a little bit about kind of your path here and stuff, and one of the things that I was hoping to get here was. What's the biggest challenge you've had in investing?
Yeah, it's always been, from the beginning, my biggest challenge has always been trying to figure out financing for properties, because, you know, as a 21-year-old when I got started, I didn't have any money. I was working, like I said, minimum wage job, and pretty much all the way up until just the last couple of years, I never had any money. I mean, at all. Like, I was so broke, and any money I did get, I just put into repairs on a property or something like that. And I never, you know, when I play Monopoly, which was my, like, you know, favorite game ever. I love Monopoly. When I play Monopoly, I my strategy is always the same. Go broke as fast as possible. Just get rid of my money. I don't care how, I don't want more than $100 in my pile ever. You know, if I got money, I need to buy something from somebody personally because I don't want money in my pile. And that's always kind of been my philosophy in real estate is I don't want money. If I have money sitting somewhere now, that's a, I have a higher risk tolerance than most. Like I admit that I've had a lot less reserves than I probably should have, especially when I started. But that was just always my philosophy is get rid of my money. So trying to figure out financing when you don't have a lot of money. I can't go to the bank and get a 20% down mortgage. I don't have 20% down and I couldn't get the loan anyway because I don't have the job history or whatever they need, the income or debt to income, all that. It never worked. So yeah, figuring out financing and every deal pretty much has been a little bit different and trying to figure that out. So, you know, the very first one was back in 07. So they were giving mortgages to anybody with a pulse. But after that, I mean, I used hard money on a couple of them. I used private money on some. I've used, what have I done? I've done a home equity line of credit on one property from, I had equity in one property and I used that. I've used a lot of partnerships. That's been a big way because I was thinking, you know, hey, if I, you know, I know what I'm doing more or less. I know how to find a good deal. I know how to fix it up and I can do the work to manage the property. I just don't have any money. So then I go find, you know, Bob, and Bob has, you know, no knowledge, has no idea what he's doing. He has no time to do it because he's working a full-time job. But man, he's got an 820 credit score and he makes $100,000 a year and he would love to invest in real estate. So like, hey Bob, you know, what do you think about you putting down the down payment on this property? I'll take care of everything and we'll just split everything 50-50. Well, that's a no-brainer to Bob and, you know, it would help me get the deal. So I did that for a number of properties. That worked out really well at the time.
On was that primarily on flips then that you were doing that?
I do it on both. I've done it on rentals and on flips. Yeah, I mean, I like it. I have a few rental properties today. Even, I mean, like I have a number of properties today that I have a 50-50 partner with me on it. Or, you know, not all of them are 50-50, but usually 50-50. And at the time, they paid all the money for the down payment, or they paid all the money, or they paid the repair costs, or somehow we'd work it out. You know, my philosophy has always been, you know, if you find a good enough deal, I'm going to find the financing for it. And if I couldn't find financing for it, then it's probably not a good deal. You know, I like to use the analogy. Imagine for a minute that you have, you know, only $1,000 in your bank account. And I were to offer you my house, which is worth, you know, let's say 300 grand. I would offer you my house for $10,000. And you could have this house for 10 grand, free and clear for 10 grand. But you only have $1,000 in your checking account. But you know that tomorrow you could make 300 grand by selling it. You would figure out a way to finance it, right? You might borrow the money from somebody. You might go and sell a bunch of stuff you got. But whatever you would do, there's probably a dozen strategies if a person sat down and brainstormed right now how to come up with 10 grand to do this. Maybe you'd find a partner. You'd go call your mom and say, hey, mom, you want to split 50-50 on this big, you know, 300 grand deal? You'd figure it out. And that's always been my approach is – learn as much as I can about as many different creative financing methods as there are, and then figure it out once I find a good deal.
Let me ask you this. So you've figured out all the financing. I agree. I mean, I know on the first investment I had, that was like, I mean, first of all, the property I was buying was just a complete turd. I mean, it was just like something that I don't think the bank would finance, but the seller... Yep. The seller was a customer of mine, and he was telling me about how he needed $10,000 to go buy this other property. Well, I didn't have $10,000, but I had a line of credit kind of thing, and that was the one thing that stuck in my mind because the price he was asking didn't make any sense at all. But I remember that one thing he needed $10,000, you know, and so when that ability to do that was getting it there. But awesome. Let me ask you, so on your. You'd mentioned that you're about 52, 54 units now. You said if you hadn't been doing all the fixing, you would be at 150 units. What are the goals for Brandon Turner in your investment?
Yeah, you know, I go back and forth a little bit, and this is probably a terrible thing to say because, like, you know, people expect the guy on the internet to, you know, have this clearly established goal and exactly what he wants. And, you know, I had a goal of 100 units. That was my goal I've had for a little while now. I said I want 100 units that average $100 per month in cash flow after paying out everything, including property management, because I don't want to do that forever. And so I thought, well, that's 10 grand a month. 10 grand a month is great income. I could live on that and retire on that for the rest of my life. Today, though, I'm thinking, you know, part of me says, especially after doing this podcast for 2 years, or no, 4 years, and interviewing 200 people, I'm like, man, it sure would be fun to buy that, you know, 200 unit apartment building, or man, it sure would be fun. And it's not even about the money as much as this, man, it would be fun to do A, B, and C. It would be fun to build a kind of a wholesaling business. I can find good deals. I don't need to buy them all. Or, you know, man, it would be fun to flip more houses. It'd be fun. And so like, part of me is like, what do I want to do for fun? Then the other half of me is now I'm a new dad. And so I'm trying to actually scale back how much time I'm spending working on stuff all the time. And I'm doing bigger pocket stuff. I do a lot of volunteer work with my church. And then I got this little baby at home. And I'm like, well, I got to scale back my operation if I want to spend more time with my family. So there's these two like opposing things of I want to get bigger and do more, and I want more family time. And so I'm reconciling that right now and figuring out where that fits.
Now, that is always the challenge, is having everything in the heading in the right direction, or the same direction, as opposed to the conflicting goals there. I can appreciate that.
But I do think, you know, by not, you know, a nice middle ground there, as I see it in the future, is if I do get into the, let's say, 100 unit property, you know, I'm not fixing things at that point. I'm not going to be doing the management of that thing. I'm not going to be doing much of anything other than managing the manager or whatever. So that doesn't take a lot of time. In fact, I probably could buy 100 unit today and it would be far less work than what I'm currently doing on my 52 units, because we're actively involved in these things. I mean, I'm even doing my own bookkeeping right now, which I shouldn't be, but I'm trying to build a system that I can outsource. But at that point, when I get the bigger units, it is less work. So I think that actually does accomplish both things, is I go bigger, but I take less of a role because, you know, it's more of a system than it is a job.
Yeah, no, you become the asset manager. It's a different role. And I think it's similar to, what was it, the E-Myth book, you know, talking about how to, you know, the systems and all that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I like that. Speaking of managing, and you mentioned doing the books, do you have any, what's your software? What are you doing for your books? Are you,
Sure. We currently, so for the last 10 years, we've been using nothing but, Excel, or well, Google Sheets for the last couple of years. So it's, just using everything on there. Now we're getting a little bit too much for that, and it's getting too irritated. So I'm switching everything over to Buildium right now. For all my property management software is Buildium. And I like it. I think Buildium does a good job. I hear people say that Buildium's good up until you get like 100 units, then you probably got to switch to something like AppFolio. But since I'm just at 52 right now and AppFolio had a minimum charge, I decided to go with Buildium and figure out how that works. So I'm just beginning. I mean, we've been doing it for, I don't know, 6 months now. And so we're still kind of working through the process of how everything's going to work, but already I can see that my life is going to be so much easier using the software. Like, I wish I would have done this years ago, because I built this, my own systems off of, you know, like I said, Excel, and then later Google Sheets. And then I'm using this project management software called Trello, which we still use for managing our rehabs and stuff. And I really like that. And it's free. But we've got so many different systems working that I built just as needed, that today it's a mess. I mean, if I were to die, my wife would be overwhelmed with just mess, you know? So
yeah.
Gotta rein that in a little.
No, I can totally appreciate that. Cause it, you know, that's the one thing that's crazy about all these different opportunities, is that you get going in one and letting go of that to go to the other one, and not knowing and having multiple systems. I mean, it's just, not a good thing. Especially as you get bigger. I mean, it's just more chaos than what you need there.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Let me ask this, and we'll kind of wrap this up here, but what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody that's getting into real estate? Actually, I think, did we already talk about this?
Not necessarily. I mean, you said, you know, you asked what have I learned from the show, but, you know, my kind of message to newbies a lot of times is, first of all, like, commitment matters so much, more than I think people put emphasis on. And what I mean by that is, like, imagine getting a six pack or trying to lose 20 pounds or whatever, right? Like, a lot of people want that kind of thing. A lot of people want to lose weight. They want to get in shape. They want to look good, but they never actually commit to it. And by committing to it, it means, do you have a daily routine? Do you have a plan to get there? Are you eating 2,000 calories a day and doing 400 sit-ups a day? I mean, that when I see somebody who is consistent on tracking their meals, is doing 100 sit-ups a day, is doing P90X, I know they're committed to losing weight or whatever. When I see somebody in real estate who says, yeah, I want to be a real estate investor, and then they're watching TV at night and they're, you know, maybe you listen to a podcast and that's it, I'm like, well, I don't see signs of commitment there. Are you really committed, or are you just somebody who just wants something, just like I want to lose 20 pounds? And so I think you've got to make that commitment. Are you really going to do this or not? And if so, that commitment has actions that go with it. And so what are those actions that go with it? Now, maybe that's, you know, you should be looking at deals every Saturday, or maybe that means you're analyzing two deals every day just to practice analyzing deals, or maybe it means, you know, maybe you're just an education phase and you are just listening to podcasts and reading books. But again, I think if you're committed to this, you've got to have action to back that commitment up. Otherwise, you're not committed to it. So get committed and then build those action plans. And then secondly, I would say follow, like, figure out what works in your area, or find an area that fits with what you want to do. You know, like, you listen to a podcast and you hear, you know, Brandon here talking about buying a house for $50,000. And you're like, well, I live in LA and, you know, I'm looking for a house for $50,000. I can't find one. I guess I can't invest. Right. Well, either figure out what works. I mean, there are investors in LA and San Francisco and in Seattle and Denver, all these expensive cities. There are investors there. So figure out what they're doing, or go to where you can go where they're doing what you want to do, essentially. And then, you know, find people who are doing it and talk with them, meet with them, go to local real estate clubs, connect with people real life, actually talk to people in the real world, pick up the phone and call people, and build some relationships. And you'll, you know, there's that quote, you are the average of the five people you associate with the most. I think that's so true with real estate. You know, I started a real estate mastermind group a year and a half ago, just with like four guys I knew from Bigger Pockets, and that were all doing more than I was doing. Like, they were all more successful than me. And I said, hey guys, let's, you know, talk every other week and just sit down and talk about our problems and you know, what we're dealing with real estate. And as soon as I did that, like I started buying like three times more properties than I ever would before, just because all of a sudden I was in their mentality. I was becoming more like them. So yeah, start associating with other people that are more successful than you.
I like that. I know you're a big reader. What's the best book you've read here recently that you'd like to recommend?
Ooh, best book I've read recently. I'm going to go with, it's not even a real estate book, but I'm going to go with Darren Hardy's, what's it called? The Compound Effect. I really like The Compound Effect. I read it like 2 years ago and I liked it. And then I reread it this time and I loved it. I mean, every single bit of advice in The Compound Effect is just solid gold. And I do think every real estate investor should read The Compound Effect. It's just about doing... It's kind of what I was just saying about a little bit about commitment, where the compound effect is about doing daily actions, or at least continual actions, more and more and more and more and more. It's not about, you know, hey, I got this big deal I just happened to close today. You know, that's what the outside world sees. But the inside world, like who you are, that big deal comes after day after day after day after day of doing the right consistent actions, and they compound upon themselves, which is the compound effect. So doing the right thing over and over and over and over and over is vital. And yeah, the compound effect, Darren Hardy, was fantastic.
I'll have to pick that up. Well, Brandon, I've kind of run through what I was hoping to talk about. I want to thank you again for making time for us today.
Sure.
And what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Sure. I mean, I'm on Bigger Pockets all the time. You can see me there all the time. Or, you know, I'm a big fan of Instagram. It's like Brandon_official. I should probably change that because it's too hard to say on a podcast. Or Twitter @Brandon@BP.
Got it. Well, hey, Brandon, thanks again. And much continued success with your investing in Bigger Pockets.
Yeah, thank you very much. You too.
That's all we've got for this week. Be sure to check out Brandon on Bigger Pockets and the Bigger Pockets podcast. You can either search or go ahead and click on the link in the show notes for both. We know you're busy. We appreciate you taking time to check us out today. We do appreciate you. Until next time, thanks for listening to Commercial Real Estate Pro Networks CREPN Radio.
You're listening to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals. For more information on this or any of our guests, like us on Facebook, CREPN Radio.